accession number 23196, Reel 7.
Mr. Wilkinson, Reel 7. So you got news of the end of the war,
yes.
Early May. But what happened there? You were still with the holding units in various places in Belgium.
Yes, as I said, rulers or Rosalier, depends which way you got to say rulers. R-O-U-L-E-R-S. Rulers.
And it was the same holding unit or a different
one? No, a different one.
So what happened for rulers? How long were you kept there?
About two or three days. And then we went by train from there to Gennep. That's G-E-N-N-E-P. Gennep. That's on the Dutch frontier with Germany. It rained like hell when we got off the train. I remember that night, it was pouring down. And we was in the bell tent. And there was 22 of us in the bell tent. And it was a hell of a job. If you wanted to go to the toilet in the night, you had to crawl out over 21 men. Wasn't there very long, about a night, I believe. From there, we went back to Nijmegen in tents on the outsides of Nijmegen. Just outside, within walking distance of Nijmegen. And we was in tents, and the weather had turned fine by that time, and it was quite a nice experience. Having to have a good trip and a nice tent, you know, it's a bit of a booster, more or less. And then the news came through that the war was over. And we went into Nijmegen and they gave us all a good fete, you know, civilians, and we had dances and, we had enjoyed ourselves there. Then there about five days, I believe.
What about the celebrations? Do you remember anything special? Like, that would be V-Day itself, wouldn't it?
Yeah, there was nothing like food or anything like that, because they hadn't got any. But it was the goals, you know. They had the dances on the square, and you were taken in the civilian houses, you know, and they looked at, gave you what they could, you know. There wasn't much about, you might say.
And how did you feel in yourself? I mean, you'd had a bad year, hadn't you?
Yeah, and I felt a great relief, actually. But of course, you always had it on your mind that the war wasn't over. You still had the Far East. That was always in the back of your mind. What are they going to do with us now? But at this moment, I didn't worry. And after Nijmegen, they put us on a truck, and we went across the Rhine, and we stayed at a place called Munster. We was there a couple of nights. From Munster, they shipped us to Hanover. From Hanover, they shipped us to Hamburg. It was all in night. And then we was in a forward reinforcement holding unit just outside Hamburg. And then the three tunners came along, and they took me back to our unit, which was now in Kaltenkirchen, which is K-A-L-T-E-N-K-I-R-C-H-E-N.
And that would be in May 1945.
I got back on May the 22nd. And they just, when I got back there, I saw very few chaps that I recognised. They were all different. There were some chaps there that belonged to the theatre. One of them, they used to talk about Shakespeare and all that. And they'd been actors, you know. And there's only a few that I recognised when I left. And that was in that time.
That was in February. What had happened? They'd been casualties.
Yeah, most of the sergeants I knew had all gone. The only one that was left was the major. Major Tinniswood, he was there. But the sergeant major, he wasn't there. Some of the platoon sergeants was changed. The only ones was about, about six to eight that I knew before I left.
And this wasn't demobilisation, this was people being...
No, they didn't start that yet, you know. You know, so you can get a gist of what... I quickly made friends with them again. I mean, you do in the army, you know. You get to know them all again. And the first team I put there was a fried egg. And the cook says to me, haven't got enough, he's not on our rations yet. I said, come off it. I said, and we had fried egg for tea. And we were static then. We was in Calton Kirk and up till, I suppose, about July, the early part of July.
And what were you doing in Calton Kirk?
Little route marches, not much. Most of the time you was just loafing about. They had what they called dogs, and the CO decided we'd have a dog meetings, and of course by that time they put me in the Pioneers.
What did that mean?
The Pioneers is the workshop. Yes, and all those that have been in the building trade, like bricklayers, carpenters, plumbers, they can come out of the infantry companies and go into HQ as Pioneers. And I was taken in there as a carpenter. And we made these tracks for dogs. Like a box like they have on the dogs, you know, with the two shafts on the top. And they ran a load of dogs around, all around, you know, different types of dogs all have been made homeless. We had Alsatians, we had poodles, we had all sorts. And everyone had a dog of some sort, you know. And they said it was like 10 marks a bet. And they used to line up a dozen of these dogs in these boxes. And the little ones had halfway a handicap. So they put the boxes halfway for the little ones. And the Alsatians had the full run. And they used to open the flashes with a whistle. And the dogs went flying out. A bit of a con really, because the bloke that owned the dog used to whistle from the side and the dog would come across the others. But it was a bit of luck, something to do. We had two liberty trucks go, one on the Saturday and a Sunday, and on a Wednesday. They used to take me to Hamburg, and they could get tea and wads, and after a little while they started building the what wasn't too badly damaged into big nappies, and they had the dance band in there or a light orchestra.
Can I ask about how did you get all the German civilians?
Quite well, actually. Quite well.
In what way? I mean, how?
Well, they're very friendly. Very friendly. One would think, you know, you've never been at war at all. Because, I mean, there wasn't many men about. There was more women than there were men, because the men were all prisoner of war. The only men you really saw was old ones, or very young ones. I mean, there's so many held prisoner of war, it's unbelievable. But we had some of them in our company, as one was a tailor, one was a cobbler, one was an interpreter, and they used to, have little sessions of German, learning German, or if you wanted your shirt done, you should cut a piece off the tail and make a collar for your shirt. If your shoes went, they'd mend your shoes, you know. And very friendly.
So the POWs were attached to your camp?
Yeah. And
what about the black market? Were you aware of much about that?
Oh, there was black market, yeah, but we never saw much of that, because that went on behind the line. I mean, that went on all the time. I mean, the infantry is up the front most of the time.
Have I been in Germany, you know?
Oh, yes, there was, yeah. I mean, I smoked then, but I didn't smoke a lot, you know. I always had some over. And if you sold a few cigarettes, you got so much money, German marks, so you didn't touch your army pay. So when you got your leave, you got the advance money, it built your money up. But some of them were really in it, you know. They really on the black market, you know. Not so much our unit, but those that had been in the base areas, you know, they'd already got that worked out while the war was on, so they had it in the right in the bag by the time the war was over. Anyway, as I say, we was there for a little while.
What were the dance bands, you know, the shows that were put on, what were they like, the entertainment shows?
It was quite good, actually. We used to have a divisional show, that was a divisional dance band. Then you had the they used to sing songs like George Formby and the ukulele, and then you had the answer shows like sometimes you get one of the big ones come, not very often.
Were they any good? I mean, you know, the shows.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. And then we had their own dances as well.
What were they like?
Well, sometimes I played the piano, and somebody else played the drums. And then sometimes they had somebody else play the piano, and then they had a little battalion band, you know, a couple of trumpets, a small thing, you know. So had the dances, you know, and of course most of the girls were German because there was no English there. So all the girls used to come to the dances, you know. And we was there about Kaltenkirchen, and then we were sent up to the Russian front, in a place called Schwerin. It was near the Masurian Lakes.
And
the Germans, the Russians was dug in on one bank and we was on the other bank.
How do you spell Schwerin?
S-C-H-E-R-W-I-N. Schwerin. Yeah. I-N. Schwerin. And somebody's got a photo of me there, but I haven't got it on me. It's one of my family's got it. And it shows General Dempsey's parade, and we were in Schwerin and with a pipe band.
And when did you move there? About July?
Yes, yeah. The Russians were one side of the line and we was the other. Occasionally the Russian officers used to cross over to our side and have a party with the English officers or vice versa, and then they rearranged the border between east and west, and we pulled back to Lubeck.
Lubeck,
yeah, L-E-U-B-E-C, I think it's C-K, Lubeck. And then the Russians came in behind us, and they was there before we even got back on guard. That was the last we saw of the Russians. And then we went to a DP camp on guard, and it was all Polish there.
That's displaced persons.
Yeah.
What state were they in?
They're pretty, pretty good nick, really. They got fed, you know. I think they got fed by the Germans because they didn't look particularly thin, you know what I mean. They'd probably done their work and they got fed. And there was all sorts there. There was Polish, there was Danish, there was Dutch, all got displaced, you know. There was Yugoslavia, they did nothing all day. They just sat around in the sunshine. All the elderly ones used to sit around on the sides of the field, and all the others used to have a little Polish dance in the middle of the field. They didn't do much. They just got fed and looked after. We was on guard there for about a fortnight, and then we came back again to Kaltenkirchen, and I was there till December, and they sent me to Lubeck for a 5-day refresher course in my trade.
Sigma?
Yeah. As a carpenter and joiner.
What was that course like?
The RE Royal Engineers Artworks, ART, art.
And what was the joiner's course like?
They told you to make something, you know, and then they instructed you on different things about the trade. All I remember, it was so damn cold there that when you got your food, you had a place at the back of the house under lean-to to have your food, but it was so cold that you rushed out the back door and to the front door to get in. By the time you got in the front door, it was frozen solid. And it was cold, blimey. I was there, and then they sent me back to Kaltenkirchen. And then I went in front of his company commander, and he said, the division is disbanding. He said, you're being posted to the 4th Lincolns in a place called Brion, B-R-I-L-O-N. And that's in the Ruhr Valley.
And that was in December 45 still?
No, January. This was. We finally moved on the end of January, about the end of January, moved to this place called Breiland, and it was freezing cold, 6 foot of snow, and it was more like the Alpine region, you know, a lot of pine trees and snow. It was only a large village. There wasn't much entertainment there, really. They had a canteen, but...
How did you fit? That was the 4th battalion,
yeah.
Think you're
right. Yeah, 4th battalion.
How did you fit in with them?
Fit in quite all right, actually. We all had a pioneer shop, and all the day was spent going into the shop and standing about doing nothing.
So you were in the pioneer platoon again?
Yeah, yeah. Some were bricklayers, some were electricians, some were all put to together, and we didn't have much work to do. It was just went there to pass the time away or make something yourself, you know, toys or things that, you know. And and then from there, in the spring, we moved to a place called Gevelsburg, Gevelsburg. That was a bigger place. There we had the canteens, we had cinema, public cinema, more or less like a small town, you know. We didn't have much to do. And then from there, we was there for a short while, and we went to a place called Schwerter, and that was about July. That's 1st or 2nd of July, we went to this place called Schwerter, and that was another sort of a small town.
S-C?
S-C, so difficult. S-C-H-E-R-W-T-A. Schwerter. We was there right up till August. You had a cinema there, you had a canteen. You could borrow the police bikes if you like and go around touring, you know, in your spare time. We had a lot of work to do there. We had to make a lot of divisional signs, you know, swing signs, and the sign writers painted it, you know. We made barriers for like pull down the post, like a frontier post, paint it off. In August, they said, I think it was August the 14th, 45, 46, that's right, yeah, 46. They said, all those that are going to be demobbed within the next 3 months are going to be posted to GHQ 2nd Echelon, which was in Hamburg itself. It was just outside Hamburg, a place called Rahlstedt. Rahlstedt, R-H-A-L-S-T-E-D-T, Rahlstedt. And I was there right up till...
And what were you doing there?
We were sent there as caretakers for the Murray quarters. They took over some German houses. We had to guard the houses while the married women came over and settled in. Failing that, they used to get one chap go round with paper, drop it on the ground, and we followed him round picking it up again. Anything to keep you busy, you know?
And you went there in...
And I was up there till the 27th of November. And
from August to November?
Yeah, quite a time. It was in Red Quarters, it was right near Hamburg itself, and there was plenty to do. Some of the cafes had started to open, you know, but they never had any food. Even at that time, they was very, very poor in foods. But you could get it in the canteens, you know, you could get a three-course dinner for about 4 marks or something like that. And you had a band in there, you know, in Hamburg itself, or a band, or sometimes a police band used to play on a Wednesday afternoon. And from there, I got the mob orders, and I was sent from there to the Baltic port, Cuxhaven. Spelled Cuxhaven. And there I boarded a boat to Hull. I brought home a camera, some toys I'd made in the Pioneer shop. They let me go through with the toys, they let me go through with the camera, and they clothed me for a pair of cigarettes. So I had to pay £5 duty on the moment cigarettes that I hadn't smoked. Then I got back into York, and there I was demobbed, and got back indoors on the 30th of November.
What do you remember of demobilisation? How did they actually do it? What did they give you?
All you did, you just went there, and they gave you a meal, and then they said, right, all the equipment in there. And then your knife, fork and spoon went in, and they said you kept one battle dress free, you kept your greatcoat if you paid £1, they gave you a pair of shoes and a cheap blue serge suit, which was horrible colour, showed all the dirt and everything. You ever got no underclothes whatsoever. That's all you got, your suit. I think they gave you a raincoat. Your greatcoat you kept for a pound, and you could keep your one uniform. So when you got back, any clothing coupons you had to go on underwear.
Now, when you got back, how did you settle back into civilian life? I mean,
it was quite a fuck struggle, really. I was all right for a little while. That's when I met my wife. She sort of helped us out of it, you know. She was a bus conductor at that time, and going out with her, like, sort of softened it a bit, you know. But I was a bit lost, you know. You sort of you nobody was looking after you, might say. Because, I mean, in the army, they, whatever you like think about the army, they do look after you. I mean, they see you're fed, and they see that you've got a bed, or you know, when you're out of the, when you're in peacetime, you know, and they see your clothes properly, a medical treatment. I must add that this time I was very ill with boils and carbuncles. Could have been done the food, I don't know, but a hell of a lot of chaps had it, and I had it very badly indeed.
When did this started?
It started in when I was in that place called Gevelsberg. They started off first of all as little tiny boils, and then they got bigger and bigger and bigger, and I had them on my fingers, and I had all over my arms. You can see all the scars, everywhere I've had them, all there.
How did they treat them?
All he said to me then was, we need fresh vegetables. He said, I don't believe in tonics. So what help was that? He said, I know you can't get what you want, he said, but that's what you want. He said, give me nothing for it, nothing at all. I was just out of suffering silence.
Now, did you go back to work as a joiner?
Yes, I did. I didn't start work till January the 19th of 1947. I drew my last army pay on the 12th of January.
And did you go back to your old firm, or...?
No, at that time they had what they called the shutdown. When they were short of coal, they shut industry down. So I thought, well, I'll have to go on the building then, you know. And I got a job round, not far from here, Fran Barnett Road, around Bramber Road. And I think YJ Lover was building some houses there. And the day that I started there was the start of the very severe winter. I went in the morning, it was comparatively mild, but by the afternoon the temperature had plummeted. We couldn't do nothing, we were just frozen up. All the bricklayers, you had a little house opposite and they used to have a fire. All the joiners had to go out in the cold. But you could never do nothing. You went up in the roof and your hands was just numb. You couldn't feel a hammer. And it was very dangerous, everything was covered in ice. And I had about a fortnight there, and they shut the site down. They said, we can't. And by that time, because everything was shut down in the factories. And I went up to the dole muck to get me dole money. I'd only been on the dole in my life. I went up there, and eventually, and they said, what are you? I said, joiner. He said, inside or outside? I said, outside. Oh, you have to give 3 days waiting. I said, but the government said, they waived that. He said, no, only if you're not in the building trade. So I had to give 3 days waiting, and I got 2 days dole money, and that's all I've ever had out of the state. I've always been in work.
So how long were you, when did you work, you go back to the, you stayed in the building trade as a joiner, did you?
Yeah, then I went back to my old firm then. When the set power came back on, I went back to my old firm. From there I was there for about 2 years, and I decided I wanted to change, and I went into a shop fitting firm. That's David Sage at Haringey, a big firm. I was there for about 2 years. I went back to my old firm again, and I was there for 18 years.
So you got steady work as a joiner.
Yeah.
How do you think your wartime experiences had affected you physically and mentally? Because you'd had a very rough time, good or bad, I mean, physically and mentally.
I can't say I disliked the army. I could have done without the action part. I found that the army life, providing you kept you behaved yourself and kept your nose clean, you had good friends, you had good company, which you never found in civilian life. And I found that to, when I came out of the army, I thought, well, where's all my friends, where's all my mates, you know? It's like now, I mean, I belong to the Normandy Veterans. You know, we have a meeting up at Whetstone every four. We have our little outings in the summer. We go to Normandy for D-Day. We're not going this year because we're saving up for the big one. But we all have a go to different things in the summer. We go to the taxi drivers out into Worthing in the next month, all of us, all the blokes that have been in the army. Not everyone goes, but because I was in the Normandy Veterans, our name was put forward. But I found my friends that way.
But what about, I mean, did you have any after effects from your mentally, from, you know, stress from the tough time you'd had?
No, I should say I got over that pretty well, actually.
No nightmares or anything?
Oh, that's the funny thing. I do have nightmares, but I never have nightmares about the army. It's always nightmares about when I was at work. Never about the army. I don't know why.
And what about physically? Any problems? Other than the boils? But
that was an illness in itself, yeah.
But after, other than that, any other after effects for you?
No, I was ill.
No more trouble with your hand.
I was ill for 2 years. You might say, I mean, that's an illness in itself. I mean, you feel really terrible when you've got big boils; they pull you right down. I did get over it. I had injections and penicillin and whatnot, and they didn't go away straight away. They took quite some time before they phased away. But a funny thing is, I've never seen anybody that I know in the army ever. Never. Either you pass them in the street or you don't, you know. You don't see them at all. It's a funny thing.
Thank you very much.